Hello, Guardian listeners and readers. I'm Ewan Spence, and welcome to this interview about my experiences at Eurovision this year.
Ewan, tell us what you're going to be doing now.
I'm going to be doing a bundle of things, but mostly I'm going to be providing live coverage through social media, such as Twitter. I'm providing written articles for a number of publications on my own website, but I'm also doing a daily podcast coming out of the stadium up in Oslo.
Why? I mean, why are you going? Why are you doing all of this?
If you change the word Eurovision to a football team, you know, nobody would question why a Manchester United fan would head to Wembley or a fan of Ross County is going to head to Hampden. So I always find it strange that people go, well, why are you going to Eurovision? It's because I like music, I like spectacle, I like performance, and it's just fun. And this, you know, Eurovision lasts all year round. This is our cup final.
Why would people want to listen to you, somebody doing podcasts and Twitter over just, you know, the TV coverage of Eurovision? Couldn't they just watch it on their tellies? What do they get that's extra?
In terms of the podcast coverage, it's been running since about mid-April. Okay, so the first four were very short guides of, you know, this is how the scoring works, this is how political voting works, and this is what to look out for to go, oh yeah, we know what's happening there. The 3 weeks running up till now, we've been running what I call Jukebox Jury. We've been sitting down, myself and two other invited Eurovision fans, we've had six people on there now, listening to all the Eurovision songs, five songs an episode, and talking about them. You know, do we think that's a winner? Do we not think it's a winner? Why, oh, why is the Swedish entrant wearing Converse trainers? That is so David Tennant. He's gone now. During the contest, some people don't like their national commentator. Some people would rather have a trusted voice. There will be some people that go, well, I've been listening to you in for the last month. We're at the big game now. I'm going to stay with him. And in terms of Twitter, because, again, it's a value-add service, you're watching it on the television, yet you have everybody around the world talking about this at the same time. People want to share experiences, and it doesn't matter if they're on the internet or if it's a short story told around a campfire back, you know, 500 or 600 years ago. People want to share stories and share experiences. And social media, during a live event, you know, it's such a coming together. It's one of the goals of Eurovision was to create this sort of spirit around Europe of community. And when you take that spirit of community and then you hand it tools, then all of a sudden that community becomes empowered and it becomes its own best friend.
You say that and you make it sound very, very noble and, you know, serious endeavour, but it is kind of odd as well, isn't it? It's kind of gaudy and a little bit embarrassing at times and all these things.
So are we talking about the Manchester United Cup final again or Eurovision?
I'm talking about Eurovision.
I think one of the problems that I always have is that the mainstream media have decided that in the UK, certainly, that Eurovision is a bit tacky. But it's not. I mean, if you sit down and you crunch the numbers, you're talking about, you know, 20,000 people at a live concert venue. You're talking about 120 million TV viewers. That's more than the Super Bowl. That's more than the last episode of MASH. That's likely 10 times more than the last episode of Lost is ever going to get.
But it is tacky, and isn't that part of the reason why people love it?
Okay, why is it tacky?
The colour, the type of music, it's what cheesy.
So let's see, the music that we have coming up, we've got ballads coming up, we've got a Linkin Park-esque group coming out of Turkey, we've got an R&B infused ethnic rhythm coming out of Azerbaijan and Armenia, we've got whatever Pete Waterman and Mike Stock have concocted up for Britain. Putting that aside, I think that says more about Britain than the rest of that. You've got an Ibiza dance rap coming from France. You've got this almost operatic but modern influence song coming from Norway. You've got a typical duet which does have that sort of bubblegum pop feeling coming out of Denmark. You've got a circus infused waltz coming out of Spain. So to turn around and go, oh, it's tacky and colourful and I just remember ABBA, I'm sorry, is journalistic shorthand.
What kind of style or voice do you try and bring to the event? What can people expect to hear in one of your podcasts?
Well, the only way to do it is put on a little bit of an Irish accent and go, oh, look at the idiot over there. I'm myself at Eurovision. I mean, there's no too much. People who follow me on Twitter, people who listen to the podcasts, people who know me, you get what you see. You get someone who's enthusiastic about the subject. You get someone that has done research on the subject. And you get someone that, yes, can look at it as a fun event. But this is, you know, it's a serious competition as well. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 20, 30 million euros being spent on this event. This is a cultural high point for most of Europe. The fact that Britain, and to a certain extent Ireland, kind of goes, eh, that's not my problem.
And finally, predictions for a winner.
Very tough this year. The bookies favour Azerbaijan is doing very strong in rehearsals. And a lot of people are tipping Germany. But, you know, when people look at Eurovision, Germany doesn't have a lot of friends. So those two are likely to win. But I think on the outside, keep an eye out for Romania and also possibly Greece as well.